Public hearing is change of zone number 1960 OA Oaks LLC.
This is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an HR1 RPC, high density residential district, residential planned community, to a HR1 RPC, high density residential district, residential planned community, to amend the conditions of approval for change of zone number 1858, which is ordinance number 2621, relating to the workforce housing requirements, internal road standards, and amenities deadlines for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore Hundred, Sussex County, containing 14.84 acres more or less. The property is lying on the northeast side of Zion Church Road, which is Route 20, approximately 0.27 mile northwest of Bayard Road, which is Sussex County Route 384. The 911 address is not available, and the tax parcel ID is District 533 and Map 11, Parcel 82.00. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of Ordinance Number 2621, which is CZ 1858, dated December 11th, 2018. We have a copy of a letter received from the applicant. We have a copy of the staff analysis and as part of the staff memo. We have a copy of the DelDOT service level evaluation response. And we have a copy of the applicant's exhibits and suggested revisions to the conditions, including a proposed clean copy of the conditions of approval. I would note we have received zero comments in support or opposition. Thank you.
All right. We thank you. Mr. Fuquay.
I can take this off up here.
You may.
Yep. Good evening. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I represent the applicant OA Oaks LLC. I was hoping to wish everyone a happier new year than the conditions to see everyone with their mask back on and the plastic back up. And I hate this feeling. I feel like a hockey player back in the penalty box again. In any event, as was stated, this is an application to amend certain conditions of approval of change of zone 1858. I think the commission will recall this application, but to refresh our memories, as well as for the benefit of Mr. Mears, who was not on the commission at that time, I just want to give a little bit of history.
I remember.
The original application requested a change of zone to HR1 RPC. For a 14.8 acre parcel of land located on the northeast side of Zion Church Road. The use being proposed was a 178 unit rental apartment development with 36 of the apartment sites having income qualifications in order to create a workforce housing opportunity as part of this development. That again is geared toward moderate and lower income residents in Sussex County. The need for workforce housing in Sussex County was documented in and designated as a goal of the county's comprehensive plan, so there was no question that there was a need for that. Back in 2008, the county had actually enacted an ordinance called the Sussex County Rental Program to encourage development of affordable rental housing for county residents. Unfortunately, as of 2018, when this application was filed, there hadn't been any rental projects proposed under the terms of that ordinance due to the requirements of the ordinance. The ordinance just didn't seem to be working to the point that it attracted anyone to actually make a proposal. So in 2018, the applicant proposed the Ashton Oaks development. It is a market rate development, but it was going to have this workforce housing component to it. The applicant actually proposed conditions for the workforce qualifications that were based on the county requirements, but different. They were modified from the county to make it more economically feasible for the project to actually work. Now, that original application was approved by the county council in December of 2018, and it was subject to conditions A through S. The applicant this evening is asking to modify conditions B, G, and I. Condition B actually addressed the operation and the tenant qualifications as far as income for the 36 workforce housing units. This is a little bit different. This condition isn't really a land use type of condition that you normally deal with. It's really an economic and housing formula. So I wish you luck with that. Mr. Shell is going to explain the need and the reason for the change. Condition G actually addressed the development streets and the parking areas, and what's being requested is a clarification of those requirements. And condition I addressed the time for completion of the recreational amenities. And as you know, normally, particularly on subdivisions, you normally tie the amenities into a building permit. And I think that's the standard thing. In this case, I just, again, ask you to remember, this is an apartment building complex, so the construction is not the same as building individual homes. And again, Preston Schell is going to come up and basically explain the issues and why we think these proposed modifications would actually improve the conditions. None of these conditions in any way are intended, nor do they interfere with the goal of providing 36 workforce housing units as part of this development complex. So with that, I will ask Preston to come up and explain to you the changes.
Just hang on for a second, give our assistant a chance to get everything dusted off for your safety and protection.
So for the record, Preston Schell with OA Oaks LLC. I live in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. It's kind of difficult. Hopefully you guys got my letter and you read it and made some sense. But some people would read our changes to Section B and say, look, I see how you move some things around and change the wording of some things, but I don't really see what you changed. And in an effort to try to address that, I'm going to try to explain it better. The main difference is we attempted, and what I want to lead with, these errors were entirely on us. I'd love to be able to blame someone else for them, but this language came from us. It didn't come from the county, and we're correcting our mistakes, or attempting to correct our mistakes. The way it was originally, we were attempting to lease 36 units to households making, at prices set to households making 70% of area median income, and we're still doing that. The problem is, the way that we wrote the language, the rent was a moving target. And in talking to our kind of affordable housing professionals that are more experienced at this, they're like, guys, that's impossible to manage. You can't do that. And what'll happen is, the way you've written this is you're targeting people at a certain rent level, and then as soon as they make more money, as soon as they make more than 70% of AMI, you can't renew the lease again. So you're gonna have tons of turnover in your affordable units, and no one wants that. That's not good. You've done this incorrectly. And we're mirroring to a certain extent, well, not mirroring, but this looks a lot more like the county's new rental program in the way it's structured than the way we originally structured it. So the first change to Section B, we simply took a provision of the 30-year restriction that was in B1 that used to be called restricted units, and now it's called rent, and moved it up. So it's the same thing, it's still 30 years. 36 units, it remains 36 units. That's in the introductory paragraph in B as well. The rent is now set, so it's an identifiable rent. It changes as area median income changes in the county, but all three bedroom units that are restricted in the project will have the exact same rent. All two bedroom units that are restricted will have the exact same rent, and the rent will be set according to HUD standards for households in Sussex County making 70% of area median income. But the biggest change we made is we no longer have to kick someone out as soon as they make above 70% of AMI. So you look at the eligible income level, in the county's new proposed program, it goes from 50 to 100% of AMI. When we talked to some of the affordable housing folks in the county, they said, look, you don't need to go to 100%. You're going to be fine. Just go to 80%. There's plenty of households that will qualify and plenty of people that will need this housing, and you're grabbing a broad enough spectrum of them, but with having eligible incomes between 50 and 80% of AMI, so you don't need to go to 100%. So now if a household comes into the project making 68% of AMI, their rent is set at that set level, assuming they make 70%. But if their household does better, and all of a sudden they have to reapply every year to verify income and make 71%, we don't have to kick them out. Now we do have to kick them out. We don't kick them out. We just don't renew the lease the next term. Once they make 81%, we will have to tell them, hey, I'm sorry, but you're not. But what we'll probably do, and what typically happens in these situations, and what's called inclusive housing, where you have market rate units next to subsidized units, you just move them into a market rate unit. They actually don't move at all. You just, that unit becomes a market rate unit. And then the next available unit that comes up is, will have to be an affordable unit because you have to fill that 36 number. So it was really our relative ignorance, because we've never done this before. We're trying to correct for that before we have a problem and actually have a built project out there. The other thing is, when talking to folks from Delaware Housing Coalition and Milford Housing Development Corporation, they said, look, you're going to have a higher demand for your three bedrooms for the affordable units than the one and two bedrooms. We don't want you to be able to do more one bedrooms than the number of units you have in the overall project, the proportionate number of units you have in the overall project, but we do want you to be able to do more three bedrooms. So from strictly a financial standpoint, it's actually not in our best interest, but if it would otherwise be an empty unit and we have a waiting list of people looking for three bedroom affordable units, we can increase the number of three bedroom units, but that's it. We can't increase the number of one bedroom or two bedroom units. That's the change to Section 5, unit integration. And it's not that much. It only gives us like an extra one or two units of three bedrooms in the affordable, the 36 affordable units that we can rent to qualifying households. Section G, if you look at the site plan, Jamie, can you take us to the... You can see, like, just look at the first two buildings. If you're coming in the main entrance on the right, the way the ordinance was written, we would have to put a sidewalk on the far side of the road that probably no one would ever use. And then the other thing we would have to do is, if you look at the buildings in the back, that back up to the wetlands, there'd be a sidewalk right next to our multimodal path. So literally you'd have like a 5-foot concrete sidewalk and then a multimodal path. And we went to Hans, and Hans is like, look, I agree, that makes no sense at all. But I want more interconnectivity between the sidewalks and the trails you have. So he added additional sidewalk, or suggested that we add additional sidewalks and additional connectivity, but said, I want to make a change so you're not putting sidewalks on the side of roads that you'll never use. And so really, this language came directly from Hans, this change, Section G. And then the other change, Section I, know you guys want to do building permits, so we can do that. But let me explain where the problem is. These amenities, the clubhouse and the pool, the dog park, and the other components of the amenities take about 6 months to build. When we start, we can start the amenities and we can start building one at the exact same time. When you have your trades, you have your foundation people, you have your framers, everybody, you try to hop them. So you don't want your foundation guy to leave the job, because as soon as he leaves the job, it's hard to get him back. So you have him do your first building. As soon as he's done with that foundation, you have him go to your second building, because apartment complexes, unlike condos or for sale, is built all at once. You don't kind of build a building, wait for it to sell, and then start your building, the second building 3 or 4 months later. You build it as fast as you can build it. And so we try to shoot for 4 weeks. The reality is we're usually closer to 6 weeks between buildings, building starts. So let's just use 6 weeks. If we start building one and the amenities at the same time, we're going to start building two 6 weeks later, building three at 12 weeks, and building four at 18 weeks. The problem is, now we're looking at essentially 4.5 months, and we won't be done with our amenities. We won't be able to pull that building permit for building four, because we'll be sitting there for 6 weeks waiting for us to complete the amenities. And when you have to stall these projects, you're not going to lose all the subs. There's some loyal subs out there that will stick with us and come back to the site, but we'll lose some subcontractors, and I'd rather not do that. So if the objective of the commission, which I think it is to make sure we build those amenities and we build them as quickly as possible, and if the preference is to make sure it's tied to a building permit, I think we can still do that, but tie it to building six. That way we're not gonna not build a 24 to 32 unit building in order to slow play our amenities. So we're still invested in completing those amenities as quickly as possible, but it's still tied to a building permit, and it works with our timeline of construction. And I don't know if we gave that to you and just screwed that up or not, and I'm not, who knows, but That was probably our mistake as well.
Probably would want to say the sixth building, not building number six, in case you decide you want to build seven after five, but the sixth building.
Yeah, the sixth building permit, we will have to have completed our amenities before we can pull the sixth building permit.
Do you generally start your amenities at the same time you start the buildings?
Yes, because it's also our leasing office.
Okay.
And leasing is a lot easier to do out of an active leasing office where people can kind of go in and get a feel for the interiors and everything than it is out of either a trailer or off-site. So we start it. That's not always 100% true. I want to step back. There are some communities where we've started the amenities 3 to 6 months after starting the first building, but we do not intend to do that here. Like Seaglass, but this is probably getting into more detail, but it's the backup right now at the commercial permitting office is far greater than the timeline it takes to get a residential building permit. So we have to submit our commercial permit. We sometimes wait 3 months to get our permits from the county on the clubhouses, and that has sometimes delayed the start of the clubhouse. Having said that, we anticipated that issue at Ashton Oaks, and we're ready to submit. The second we submit for final to you guys, we're ready to submit to the county for the commercial building permit for the amenities in the clubhouse. So we're going to try to get ahead of that as much as we can.
And the one thing I would add too is that this is a different sort of project, a rental versus a subdivision. You know, with the we put that condition in on amenities for a subdivision, just like we bond subdivision, so we don't get third-party people that have bought a lot and then they're waiting on amenities that never come. Here, the developer is going to own all the
owns
units
everything.
And
yeah,
is going to so be trying really to rent them, so it's in their interest or not to get those amenities
right.
done.
Correct.
There's not the third parties to protect.
Right. Now, I was just wondering if we put in something that just said that as long as it was substantially underway and in active building that we didn't have to worry about it, but
well, I
that's
think
fine,
the
either way.
The applicant's offering the sixth building. We can. I'm fine with that.
Can I ask some questions on the workforce housing part of it?
Yeah, sure.
Just to explain, Mr. Self, if you could. I'm not sure the county, because we, just for clarification, before they applied, there were some good conversations that were had with Mr. Shell and his group and our community development and housing people, and then we talked about it, you know, to try to understand what he was requesting so that we knew what was going on prior to the application. So there's sort of two points to that, and maybe it was me misunderstanding it, or maybe we're both right. Part of it, at least the understanding I think community development and housing had, and I did, was that by changing it to 50 to 80, you weren't pegged at 70 for people coming in the door also. So that if somebody was at 71 or 72, you could have an opportunity to lease to them.
Correct.
And then offset it with somebody who's a 69 or 68 in terms of what their income was.
And to be clear, if a household's making 75% of AMI, I still lease to them as if they're making at a rate set to 70%.
Right.
It's a fixed rate.
Right.
So they in a sense get a discount.
Right.
But yes, that's correct. That helped. The way it was structured before, I was incentivized to grab anybody as close to 70% as I could.
Right.
So I was incentivized to grab someone just below 70%, but if you do that, you're setting yourself up for a lot of turnover because that household is more likely to crest your 70% and then
right.
you'll have to kick them out.
Well, and then I know the county then once it was submitted, they actually, this came in the P&Z memo, because one of the things, but the other side of it was we didn't want, or we were concerned, or they were concerned, whatever, the county was concerned that, under that, without it still averaging out to 70, you could potentially rent to a whole bunch of 75s and nobody who's 60 or 65 and pay 70. So the county wanted to add the line that was in the memo that it still would balance out or level out at 70 to the tenants that you have in those 36 units.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter anymore just because the rent's fixed. And the reality is if 36 people walk in my door that are qualifying and they're all making 51% of AMI, we have to lease all 36 of them.
Right. But what I guess the county's concern was the flip side of that. If 36 people walk in at 78%, you would lease to them and not anybody who's in the 50s or 60s.
We are going to have a third-party consultant advise us, on how, particularly during the first 2 or 3 years, on how to do this, but we're going to try to be, how do I say that? I want to say need blind, but maybe that's not the right word. Where if you're between 50 and 80%, we don't care where you are in that spectrum. If we start to realize that everybody walking in the door is 78%, and somehow we're missing the lower end of our kind of qualifying households, then we'll turn to Milford Housing Development Corp and say, how do we market to these lower income households, because we're missing them. But we're not going to discriminate, and I don't think we legally can, particularly the way this is written now.
Yeah, well, it wasn't so much discrimination. It certainly wasn't. Nobody was suggesting that's the case. It was more as tenants, potentially eligible tenants, come forward, just in whatever order they would come forward in, you know, that you could use up all 36 or majority of them at people that were at close to 80%, which wouldn't then leave an available unit for somebody who's, you know, under the 70% that was originally contemplated.
True, but I think if we were doing that, then we'd have to be playing games with the applicants in the sense that we're prioritizing somebody with a higher...
Is there going to be a requirement that it average?
Well, that's what the county had suggested.
Still averages at 70%.
So it levels off at 70.
It takes care of the issue, doesn't it?
You can do that, but then there's a scenario where it might average to 71%, where if someone walks in making 75, I'd have to say no.
Okay. All right.
And... you know, Russ Huxtable's here. He's got a lot more experience with this. Let's ask him. I think he's going to speak at some point.
Well, and I guess I'll just sum it up this way. The county's concern was that when this was approved, regardless of, you know, anything else, it was 70%. And we realized there was problems with 70%. Essentially now, that's a substantive change where you're effectively saying, we're only going to charge 70%, but we can rent to people at 80%. I mean, I realize on your end, you're still making the same amount of money no matter what. But it's a question of whether, okay, is the county comfortable based on how this is approved, going from the 70% threshold to the 80%?
And the county's proposed new program goes all the way up to 100%. Yeah. Actually, that's not even true. The county's existing program with Tidal something, or Coastal Tide, I think,
Yeah, Coastal Tide.
Is 50 to 100%. Like, we thought we were pulling that down, mainly because we pulled it down because groups like Milford Housing said, don't worry about it. There's plenty of people between 50 and 80% in that market. You don't need to go up to 100% to make sure those units are always full. But we've got 20% below 70% and only 10% above. So it's just giving us a little bit of flexibility.
So essentially, with the county's program, the issue that we're concerned about could happen at 100% or 99%.
I'd have to go back and look, only because I've been working on a modification for that, and it's been on my desk for a while, and I can't remember what the original one said versus the modification at this point, but yeah.
Okay. I thought it meant that if they came in at 50% and then moved up to 70%, at 71 they'd be out, but this way, if they come in at 50% and then eventually go up to 100%, they'd still stay at that rent.
80%. No, that's true.
It would stay at that rent until 81%, and then it would go up.
And the higher you come in on the income spectrum, the less time you'll spend in that subsidized program. So it sort of all evens out. I mean,
I don't mind. Assuming that Russ tells me there's no administrative reason why we can't do it, I would be okay with a clause that says at all times, applicant will make sure that, I want to say the initial rent, that the area median income of the initial income of tenants moving into the project on average is at or below 70%. So I'd be okay with that.
Okay.
But I do want Russ to opine on that and tell me whether it's not possible for some
reason. Right, understand.
We'll catch him in a minute as soon as you tell me you're ready. And I'll see if anybody else has any more questions, and then we'll get Russ to come up.
Does anybody have any other questions for me?
Or unless you want to call Russ as a witness. You can call
I think he was... sure.
Okay, now you have to sit while we dust off the podium.
Do you guys know who he is? He runs Milford Housing Development Corporation. They're the largest.
He's probably going to tell us that.
Affordable housing developer in Sussex County.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Russell Huxtable. I live in Lewis, Delaware, and I'm the Vice President at Milford Housing Development Corporation. We are a private, nonprofit, affordable housing developer offering affordable homeownership programs throughout the state, home repair programs throughout the state, and also multifamily housing developments. We're owners and managers. We own about 1,500 to 1,600 units of affordable rental housing, as well as manage about 2,200 units of affordable rental housing. And we have a lot of experience through the low-income housing tax credit program that's out there that is a large driver of what does develop affordable housing throughout the state. We're in support of this project because, as we know, there is an affordable housing crisis within our communities, within our county, within our state. And this is a way to address that in one small way. It is 36 units. We have a need for a lot more units than that. And regarding the Section B, it does provide a little bit more consistency in operations and allows for the development to happen a little bit more consistently. This is how tax credits are done. We set, so some of the units that we own tax credit units. We do some units at 40%, some units at 50%, some units at 60%. It's a little bit more complicated than this proposal is, but we are not concerned about folks, you know, renting all units at 78%. For one, there's fair housing concerns, and there's a lot of folks out there who are in need of affordable housing, more than we really realize and probably care to admit. And they're going to be making less than 80% of median income. And so when you have two people come in at the same time, well, whoever comes in first, that's who you need to serve. And we can't pick and choose and say, well, I don't want to serve that person who's making 50% because I might have issues, because I got this one over here that's making 78%. They hit that qualification, you need to serve them. So that's basically how you address the issue of, well, we're only going to rent to the 78%.
Isn't that the law?
What's that?
Isn't that the law?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why there's no concern about steering toward just getting 78%.
Well, and I didn't mean to suggest that anybody was steering anybody towards 78%.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't know, you know, the volume of families, you know, in terms of each of these, you know, whether it's 40, 50, 60, 70, or 80%. I guess, and I'm trying to restate, you know, my understanding from what I had heard in these initial meetings was that, you know, we wanted to try to be and have this project, because I think everybody agrees it's a great project and it serves a real need in Sussex County. But if there's 36 people that come in that are above 70%, you know, individuals or families, they would qualify for each one of these units. Mm-hmm. You know, and there hasn't been a choice made. They were the first, in this example, the first 36 people to come in. All 36 units are rented to folks that are, you know, at the 78%, just because that's the order they came in. The 37th person is at 65%, who was within the category that this ordinance, as it originally was approved, was designed to attract and accommodate. But because it was all 36 units were rented to people above 70, we can no longer accommodate them if they're the 37th or 38th family to come in, if that makes sense. I think I may be misstating that, but that was kind of the, you know, the concern about it.
It does make sense. We have waiting lists at all our apartment complexes, and that first person who's on that waiting list, because the whole complex got full, unfortunately can't be served. That's just how it, that's unfortunate, but that's how it does work. If you know, going by this ordinance.
Yeah, no, that's helpful to have some real-world, you know, explanations of it versus, you know, thinking about it in theory. So
And to counteract that point, I mean, there'll be stats that will be kept because there's going to be accountability toward what is being put out there. Yeah. I would imagine that, you know, that there's not going to be the issue that there's a bunch of 70% clients and above that are going to be running these units. It's going to be lower. And to counteract the argument, like the initial 36 are at 75%, very quickly, there's folks who are moderate income that also need rental housing. Very quickly, they'll hit that 80% threshold, and that unit's going to serve that next person.
Yeah. Okay. I have a question.
Sure.
So how does it work? There must be some kind of accountability. Is there like a monthly certified list that goes on, that you maintain, somebody maintains on record? So if somebody says, wait a second, I know a person and they put their name in 3 years ago and they've not been called, you can go back to each month and say, you see, you know, here they were 170th and then they moved up and they still haven't gotten to the top of the list yet. How does that work?
You're correct. There's a waiting list that you keep. And all of our complexes, unfortunately, have that waiting list.
I'm sure.
And it could be 10 long, it can be 100 long. And what the property managers do is, in our complexes, they call the first person that's on that list. Are you still in need of affordable rental housing? Okay, you are. Send in your documents so we can get you qualified. If they say, no, we're taken care of, we're all good, go to number two, you go to number three. And typically the person reaches out to about, if you have one vacancy, they reach out to the five, because inevitably, if you've been on that list for a while, you probably have already, or hopefully have already taken care of your housing situation.
Exactly. Well, and there's another more specific to this one, because when they came through, the developer came through, outside, if it was a county project, there would be that county oversight. The county would see those lists and be able to modify it. So we sort of, and I think the developer sort of proposed this, and we maybe modified it a little bit, but there actually is a report, an annual audit that has to be provided by a CPA that's independent of the developer that says they're complying with all that, that has all those statistics and everything else.
And that will apply to this application?
Yeah, that's actually one of the conditions of approval for this application.
Yeah. They're already doing that.
Yeah. It is already in there. Yeah.
So that the county would have some ability to verify that, you know, that was all being completed. Yeah. That was all baked in.
Okay. Any more questions before we let Mr. Huxtable go?
I have a question, but I don't know if it's for him or for Mr. Schell.
Throw it out there.
I was confused. So there's going to be 36 units in our one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom. So are you dividing it up evenly? But if more people show up for three bedroom, then you can say, okay, well, we'll do 13 units of three bedroom and not.
Sorry.
Yes, yeah, so the way it's written now, mm-hmm. we have to offer the 36 restricted units in the exact proportion to the total number of units in the entire project. So of the 178 units, I think it's close to 25%, it might not be exact, but let's just say 25% of the units are one bedrooms, then we have to offer exactly 8 one bedroom units.
Okay.
As affordable. And when we spoke, and I think about 20% of the units are three bedrooms, so we would only offer 6 or 7, I don't know where that falls, three bedroom units, but Russ and the Delaware Housing Coalition said, hey, if you want to know the units we need more of those three bedroom units. And so that's why we changed that provision to allow us to offer more of those.
To have more three bedrooms.
Have more,
yeah.
Okay.
That's what he said.
And then you would just change the amount on the ones and the twos.
Yeah, we go down proportionately for the ones and the twos.
Okay, thank you. I was just spinning a little bit on that one. Thank
yeah,
you.
Sure.
And I would say the same thing. The county didn't have any concerns about that. That really made sense, you know, because if a family does come in and it's, you know, they've all been rented, you want the flexibility. So, yeah.
Okay. Any more questions? Any further questions? All right.
I think it's just really important to hit as many people as we possibly can, and it sounds like this is addressing that.
Yeah, it's reasonable changes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 2297, Shellbrook? I think you're, we got you. Okay. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 2297, Shaw Brothers Incorporated?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Come up.
Come on up.
Now, I would like to remind everybody, not folks of this on this gentleman, but, you know, this application is to modify conditions that were imposed on the original approval. You know, we don't want to hear that the original approval should be undone somehow or that there's objections to the development, because that ordinance is already in effect. So.
Understood.
Yep, thanks.
Okay, sir.
Good to see everyone again. I have some new COVID growth. My name is Jack Kane. I live at 28907 Whaler Lane. Could we get the color photo back up with the the orange block? Yeah, the yellow block in the middle. So I'm the president of the Batson Creek Estate Homeowners Association, one that's built out to the upper right-hand side of the map. You probably remember we were all here back in 2018. And for the record, the county council at that time voted not to approve this project going forward. So you know the whole history. I'm not going to go through any of that about what happened with us, with the county council, the lawsuit and all that. There are a number of people behind that are residents or who were members of that lawsuit. I'd like them to raise their hands to affirm that they're okay with the statement, brief statement I'm going to read. And I don't know if you need a count or if you got that already. All right.
We'll count them when you're done.
Okay. And then they're free to say whatever else they want to, but I don't think we'll be here till midnight tonight.
I guarantee you that.
Yeah, I guarantee it too. Uh-huh. I'm way too old for that myself. Anyway, as I said, we're the development on adjacent to OA Oaks. OA Oaks has failed to comply with the specific terms of Section R of Ordinance 2621, which was approved on December 11th, 2018. It states in part that a deed restriction shall be approved by the Office of Planning and Zoning and shall be recorded in the Office of the Recorder of Deeds in and for Sussex County within 30 days of the approval of the ordinance. It was not until November 2nd, 2021, 3 years later, that the ordinance, after the ordinance was adopted, that OA Oaks recorded the restriction in Deed Book 5582, page 337. We do not know why the developer did not file the required deed restriction, nor why the county did not enforce that requirement of the ordinance, as it was the developer who drafted the proposed conditions of approval that the council adopted. It seems unreasonable to believe that the developer was not aware of the condition that the recordation was required within 30 days of approval of the rezoning ordinance. The Chancery Court litigation challenging the rezoning concluded on May 7th, 2020. Approximately 18 months prior to the recordation of the deed restriction. So it's obvious that the developer was not waiting for the court's final order to file the deed restriction. Additionally, Section 16 of the conditions of ordinance number 2621 specifically addresses the reason for the required deed restriction. There are also concerns, and I quote, there are also concerns that if the RPC is not built or expires, the area will be developed as a high-density subdivision. Sections 115 through 125 of the zoning code states that the county, where applicable, shall require the appropriate deed restriction be filed to assure compliance with the development's plan as proffered by the appellant. And as authorized by the zoning code, there shall be a condition of approval requiring a recording restriction that limits the density to 2178 units per acre if the RPC portion of this approval is voided for any reason. It is our contention that the developer violated the terms of the of ordinance 2621 and it therefore must be declared null and void, and that the limit of 2.178 units per acre density should be reestablished. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, we thank you, sir. Now, is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition that has something different to say? You've all affirmed that you are affirming the statement that was made, so I don't want a parade of people getting up saying what the same thing that this gentleman just said. If you have something different to offer, come on up. Jillian, come on up.
Excuse me, I forgot my hardware.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. You're chilling.
I'm chilling. I didn't hear you, sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Sherry Kastner.
Okay.
I live on Raballo Road in Batson Creek. I have three things. In the original ruling, you all stated that the trend on Zion Creek Road is commercial.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right here. What we're here to talk about is the subject of this hearing, which is the how we are doing the affordable housing piece of this. This is not a rehearing on the merits of the project. If you have something to address that addresses what the subject of this hearing is, we'd be delighted to hear it.
Well, one of my questions is in regard to the Cobb property, where I raised my hand, but because I'm
right.
so tall,
well,
I guess you didn't
ship
see me.
That ship has sailed.
Well, so. I raised my hand and you didn't call.
Well, that's right, and that hearing is closed, and you had the opportunity. You did not raise your hand at the time that was allotted for your folks.
Yes, so. I did. You didn't hear me. I mean, you didn't see my hand because of the angle, I guess it was.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But I wanted to ask, since we have the Natelli's property going up with I don't know how many houses in there mm-hmm. that I believe are starting at 800, the Cobb property, which is going to be, I don't know how many. So my question is, when did you do trip pattern studies on how many more traffic counts are going to be on Zion Creek with all these new developments? And then the one across the street from the Roxana Firehouse as well.
They're done whenever DelDOT requires them. That's when they're done.
Okay, the other thing I haven't heard is the rent schedule for the apartments.
Okay, it's not a subject of this hearing.
We've heard the
Well, you're saying it's affordable.
That's what we've been talking about, was the rent schedule, whether it's 30% or 70% of AMI.
But what is it for the regular apartments?
That's market rate. The county doesn't set market rate rentals.
What is the market rate?
You have to call them tomorrow and ask them.
Okay. Thank you.
Because we don't know.
That's not a land use issue.
Not a land use issue. That's an economic issue for somebody else. Okay, we disappointed you. Okay, is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Anyone else in the room? This is the last call for the room, okay? All right, thank you.
Chairman Wheatley, just before we go, can we get a show of hands, though?
Oh, that's right, yeah. Sure. Let's have a show of hands in opposition, okay? Hold them up high, just one hand, not two, okay. And give him plenty of time. He's a lawyer, not a mathematician.
Thanks.
He might have to take his shoes off.
See the one behind this?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I had 18, Mr. Chairman.
I have that, too.
Yeah, you got 18, right, good. Thanks for confirming. Thanks, folks.
All right, okay, thank you. All right, operator, is there anyone standing by who would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to conditional use number 2297, Shell Brothers Incorporated?
Hold on, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, we have a slight technical difficulty, but if we can give it a minute,
okay.
We can better resolve
it. Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second.
You can sing for us.
I was going to say, whose turn is it to sing?
Yours, since you brought it up. Okay, we'll give him a second.
What did you say about
mute? He's going to unmute, and then he'll ask if there's anybody on the line.
Okay, great. Good.
If there's anyone on the line in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star. Okay, I have Diane on the phone. Diane, your line is open. Please state your name and address before making your comment.
Diane, are you there?
I'm sorry, I'm the viewer 3076 Iron Ranch Road at Delaware. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, I'm the daughter of Danny Brazier, who's direct neighbor to the property of Queen Paul.
Okay.
You can add my name to opposition, I'll also have my team. And I also wanted to ask, I was looking at the site map. Am I mistaken, but aren't the buildings supposed to be 3-story instead of 4? It is a 4-story.
I think it is 4. That's a good question.
I think they were 4, weren't they?
They were 4?
We're checking. We're looking.
Well, the original approval wasn't based on stories, as I recall.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think it doesn't affect the as long as it conforms to the height requirements of the county, it's the number of units that are the issue. So whether it's 3 stories or 4 stories really wouldn't matter. But we might be able to get an answer for your question. Do you have any other questions?
I'm a little confused. I'm looking at the property line on our side, which would be, I don't know if you can see which side I'm talking about, but it says it's 10-foot setback from the property line.
No, I think that's going to be more than 10 feet.
In the rear, if I can assist, Mr. Chairman, the rear setback from the parcel boundary is 10 feet.
It's 10 feet, okay.
Oh, for this zoning district, yes.
Oh, that's right, in that zoning district. Yeah, it's 10 feet. That's correct.
Are you allowed to be asking these questions?
That is correct. So okay. So the building must be 10 feet.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, if I can assist, so the buildings must be a minimum of 10 feet, but this site plan also contains a buffer that is greater than 10 feet. So
there you go. Now, I'm going to remind you that the subject of this public hearing is the rental structure, not anything else. So I appreciate that you have these questions, but that ship sailed a long time ago. So there's really none of that's going to change no matter what happens. The only thing we're talking about is how the affordable housing pricing is structured. Okay, that's the subject of this public hearing.
And the entrance and the sidewalks.
And the entrance and the sidewalks and that's correct. Right. Okay. So, but anything else? Happy to listen.
I'm fine.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Operators, or anyone else standing by?
If there is anyone else on the line in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star. At this time, there is no one else on the line who would like to speak.
All right. Well, thank you, operator. Commissioners, any further questions or comments?
No, thank you.
Okay, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening, see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. If you are choosing to leave now, please do so quietly as we have additional business to transact. Thank you.